Good afternoon. Welcome to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inica Hamilton, back to open up with you about the latest on the dance scene and the heart of what moves us. It's so good to be back with you on this Wednesday afternoon. Thank you for joining me in this dance space. And so, a question for you today, folks. How do we purposefully, intentionally create moments of deep feeling and evoke emotion through our creations? That question is inspired by today's guest. Coming up on the broadcast, choreographer Deborah Brown is in the house. So stay tuned and stay locked in right here on CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going to take a break and be right back with Deborah Brown. Welcome back to Turnout Radio. I'm Nicole Inica Hamilton. My guest today, Deborah Brown, has choreographed 13 shows for Cirque du Soleil from the company's inception, as well as additional excerpts in several others. She has won numerous awards worldwide, including an Emmy Award for the work she choreographed at the 74th Annual Academy Awards, the Bob Fosse Innovative Choreography Award, the prestigious Golden Clown at the 23rd World Circus Festival, and the first ever Soviet Press Award, an award created after seeing Deborah's work. Now, Deborah has choreographed music videos, tours, and television appearances for the likes of Aerosmith, Madonna, Shakira, Wyclef Jean, Bjork, and Celine Dion. Her film and opera work includes Metropolitan Opera, Chicago Lyric, Catwoman with Halle Berry, Van Helsing with Hugh Jackman, and the Grammy-nominated music video Satie and Suzanne, to name a few. Her own company, Line One, has produced three full evening works: Apogee, the Line One show with 12 musicians and 10 dancers and acrobats; On Air, a late night talk show; and Brace Yourself, including many other collaborations with different artists around the world. It is my great pleasure to welcome Deborah Brown to the show. Welcome to Turnout Radio, Deborah.
Hello, Nicole. Thank you for having me.
Well, it is my great pleasure. Deborah, listen, I am so looking forward to this conversation with you today.
Oh, me too.
Well, how have you been? How's Deborah been doing?
I have been doing very well. I'm in Vancouver at the moment, and it's lovely to be here. And life keeps surprising you every day, surprising me every day. Today it's raining, which I think is much needed out here.
Yes.
So very happy for that.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
And I'm curious, you said life is surprising you. How so?
Well, you know, I think you just have to take away all expectations and life will automatically surprise you. You know, being in Vancouver at this moment is a surprise, for not really a surprise, but a spontaneous thing that I come here to help out a friend. Yes, so that's a really good question. I mean, if you take away all expectations, we'll always be surprised, right? Just on a day-to-day basis.
That piece about expectations, it started to make me think about this. The older that I've gotten, the more I've released certain expectations from happening in my life. And I've noticed that it has allowed greater opportunity for happiness for me. So I found that interesting when you mentioned expectations.
That's lovely. Yes, I think, the older that I get, I realize that I just want to be in the moment and cherish this moment, because this moment is now and then it's gone.
Yeah.
And the older that I get, we have much fewer moments. So they become more cherished.
Yeah. Isn't that the truth? I think it's important, of course, for us to have, I'll speak on behalf of myself, for me to have certain expectations in life so that I have even certain things to strive for. And goals and visions, you know, I do want to hold on to those expectations. What was highlighted for me as you're speaking, I think about some of the expectations, sometimes even unrealistic, that I have positioned or placed on my life, that in the letting go of those has caused or allowed for greater freedom and greater joy.
We have to keep our dreams alive. Yeah. In our back pocket, ready to move to the front pocket when necessary.
What are your dreams, Deborah?
Oh my goodness, that's a really good question. I'm older now, so I've been so lucky to live for so many dreams to come true. You know, even if they were not actually my dreams, but my passion guided me to a very exciting life, I would say. And my wish is that it continues to be that. Full of surprising, full of, you know, the gifts of the moment. Sharing with people, adventure.
Yes.
It's a tall task, I guess. Creativity. To continue to be creative and to continue to be healthy in my body and to dance. I love dancing.
I know you do. Yes. I know you do. As you were talking, I was thinking about how it is that we attain all of what you just shared, you know, the joy in that. How do we attain that? The joy in creating, the joy of moving, the joy of life, and the joy of just being. I was watching a program yesterday called See, Hear, Love. And on the show, they were talking about how we tend to lay a lot of our focus as humans on the doing rather than the being. And it really caused me to take pause and think about that, Deborah. And what they were driving home was in the doing. You know, there's so much pressure to do in society, to be the best, to keep working, to produce in a particular way. Then sometimes we forget to just be. And so it was quite profound as I was listening to those shares. When you think about that, in the being that is, and allowing yourself to acquire the joy in just being Deborah, how do you do that?
Well, I think a big question, Nicole. You know, when I think of doing and as opposed to being, I think being feels to me like feeling.
Right.
Right away makes me think of Say, for example, when you watch a performance and you see it, sometimes you can actually feel it. There's a difference.
Right.
And when you feel something, it has the potential to move you because you feel it deep inside. And is this something that has to come from within for everybody?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an individual question for every single person.
Right. Right, absolutely. And it is a big question, right? I think for each of us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I find that, you know, I mentioned before, the older that I'm getting, you know, the more questions I have about myself, the question of how to maintain joy and happiness and how to walk through this life with the peace that I desire. You know, and so, yeah, there's always these daily questions that come up for me as I journey through this big, beautiful life.
Mm. Yeah, I would imagine that you just have to start with this minute.
Mm. Yeah, that's good, right?
put what you want in that minute. And then after that minute will be the next minute to live in joy. Guess.
I think that's a great rule of thumb.
Yes. And, you know, for myself, if I, there's certain things that I need to do every day, like to take care of myself. And part of that is eating well, taking care of the physical body every day. Just to feel the oxygen flow and to, you know, read a little bit every day, to exercise my brain. I find that, you know, basic things like this every day helps to keep your body functioning in a way that you can bring light into your life.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Creating moments of deep feeling through your work seems to be important to you. So can you share some thoughts surrounding that, and especially regarding how it's important to you?
Well, you know, going way back when I was younger, I had these legs so I could flip, but I didn't have formal classes, so I sort of made it up on my own with the support of high school teachers, what have you. Without taking formal classes, I didn't identify as a dancer or a gymnast, but I taught myself gymnastics, you know, with the support of people around. And so I guess the dreams were present all the time. What can what can I do with this? I always wanted to inspire people and to move people, and going through my life and, you know, as I grew up, of going to university and acquiring technique to be able to have more skills, and you know, going to York University and dance. Like, I went to Western first as a gymnast, so I was really involved in sport. Then switched to dance. Everything was dance after that, and fine arts. And you know, what I learned was to gather tools to help communicate to people, which was always really important, to move people.
Right.
I don't know, since I was six, I believe, my mother took me to escapades. I'm pretty sure that's a venue where we were. And then I was at home sweeping one day, and I stopped and I thought, imagine, I could imagine an arena Everyone was on the performers were on the floor of the arena. They put their right hand on their heart and then two hands in the air, and everyone cried in the audience. I don't know, for some reason this image stayed in my back pocket, so to speak, and became a mission to touch the hearts of people through physicality.
Yes.
You know, and then gymnastics, being involved in gymnastics. I was very committed for 13 years competing. And then going into dance, but I, you know, looking at gymnastics, exploring gymnastics when I started to coach, asking myself the question, okay, a triple back flip can be impressive for the physicality of it. But
yes.
What about simple acrobatic moves? Can they move the heart? Can they bring tears? Can they soften the skin and reach the soul of the public? So I started to ask myself that question, and being very fortunate to work with many talented acrobats at Cirque du Soleil, that was always part of the exploration. How to express how to do a circus act, because where the main focus was not on just the tricks, but something else was going on a deeper level.
Oh, that's good, Deborah. I like that. Well, I'm curious, what did you discover when you were asking that question of how do you reach people?
It inspired me for my journey in the work that I did everywhere, in gymnastics and dance. So it was part of the growing process. In a studio researching, and if we have the luxury to research and to search for something that moves us in a studio, so you don't have the pressure of a deadline, you have to keep searching inside to communicate to the people in front of you and to pull something out of them that inspires you at that moment, that moves you. And it doesn't have to be explainable.
Right.
We just have to feel it. For example, you know what? I was lucky enough to work with Franco Dragone often for 13 years at the circus, Cirque du Soleil. And we researched with the artists, you know, every day in the afternoon, we would play like children, where he would try to pull out all the potential that the artist brought, even if it wasn't an agenda in the show, but to pull out all of their strengths. And I remember one, you know, every day we would explore with very few words, very few explanations of where we were going. Sometimes it would be a piece of music that would lead us on an improv. Sometimes it would be one word, but it was always open-ended to follow our heart. So we had to.
Yes.
We had to follow our heart, or even furthermore, our intuition. And the goal of every day after 3 hours of creating with Franco is we had to go home inspired. Each and every one of us. And he used to say to me, Debbie, each day we have to go to work, come to work with our pants down. You know, meaning that you have to dig and you have to surprise yourself where it finds to collaborate with people in front of you. This right now, I'm talking about the process at the circus that we did. But, you know, it was like this continuous creative search in the early years for that which was invisible. trying to find it.
Yes, yes. There's a vulnerability there. And oh, this is so powerful when I think about the following your heart piece. Mm-hmm. There's a vulnerability there, I think, Deborah, that has this opportunity to open up so many doors for us as creatives, as movement artists, as individuals who are dancing through life. There's an opportunity for vulnerability to break open mm-hmm. and create from such a, I think, a powerful place. So that's what I thought of when I heard those words, following your heart.
Well, following your heart and vulnerability, who knows how to be vulnerable? I don't know. Do you know?
I think, you know, it's, oh, that's a great question. It's, oh, how do, oh, what a great question. I turn that back to you now. I think when I think about being vulnerable, over the many years that I have been in dance, that word has often been attached to something scary, being vulnerable.
Exactly.
That's, yeah.
But I think, I think we're vulnerable when we're in a situation where we don't have expectations. We become vulnerable, we could, or when we're in a situation where we allow ourselves to be moved by other people that are there.
Yes. Yeah. I think, because now I'm exploring your question about vulnerability, I think how I've allowed myself to be vulnerable is to give myself the space to do so. But I find that it's easier for me to be vulnerable in spaces that I feel safe to be vulnerable in.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there's a safety there to release, to let go of anything I've been holding on to that's preventing me from moving forward in my practice, being vulnerable for me, or how I do that, is by releasing, letting go. Letting go, opening myself up, trusting myself and perhaps the individuals that I'm with and working with. I think those are some of the steps for me when it comes to the how do I be vulnerable question.
You know, I have been in situations many, many times, many at Cirque, where I'm facing, I don't know, 30 people on stage and I don't have a clue where to go. That's happened many times. And that is a vulnerable situation. And you have to, where you're just, you have to follow your intuition. And right. Something comes. Sometimes creation comes when it comes. You can't force it. That's a vulnerable situation if we're talking about creativity.
Right.
You know, Lorena McKinnitt once said on her album, I can't quote her exactly, but her album called The Visit, creation is something that you prepare and wait. It comes when it comes. I can't remember exactly how she said it on her album cover, but it's worth looking at. And I've been in those situations before, and I often tell people I've died several deaths because there's a certain place where you just have to surrender everything you thought about you to move on to the next step when you're making a big picture with a community of people.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautifully shared. Deborah, you had mentioned Franco. What did working with Franco do for you in terms of collaboration and inspiration? Can you talk about that relationship, that working relationship?
Franco was such a gift in my life. Franco is from, he's an Italian that came to the circus from Belgium. And he was versed in the Commedia dell'arte theater. He was doing street theater, I believe. And when I got the job with circus, I had been working in Vancouver, training gymnasts on national and international levels and dancing with groups here. I snuck under the big top of Cirque du Soleil at intermission in 1986. Franco had directed this show, and the second half was 2 hours long, and I thought, very arrogantly, kind of, oh my God, they need a choreographer. The second half is 2 hours long. But I was so impressed because they were making art out of circus, and I was busy making art out of gymnastics. So that was sort of what I was driven to do, to make poetry out of different skills. So I kind of went around and gave my card. It was a long story, but in the end, in 1987, they decided that they would hire a choreographer to their creative team, first year that they were leaving Canada and opening up for the LA Festival of the Arts. In 1987, I met Franco. He spoke very little English. I spoke very little French. I had studied French in high school, but I could not gather how they were speaking at Cirque when I moved to Montreal to join the creative team in 1987. So I would watch Franco work, and we would say to each other, j'ai une bonne idée, or watch him work, and then we would show each other on stage. So our relationship was never about what we discussed. It was always about what we saw and consequently how we felt. So we developed a sense of trust that is so unique. You know, of course, over the years, I learned French. I spoke French and he spoke English. But that basis, I learned to really appreciate as a unique way to form a collaboration with someone.
I think that's quite special. Quite special, you know, when we can come together and develop a collaborative practice and relationship with someone, and that trust ends up being something that exists within that collaboration.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And, you know, so many creations, we would maybe have two words that were our themes that led us on all kinds of journeys based on who was in front of us and the talents of each and every one of them, and trying to pull them forward. So much inspiration could be based on a piece of music, a word, you know, different places. And I guess you always, I remember in one show, we had a creative meeting with all the heads of all the departments, and Franco asking everyone around the room, what is the one thing that is the most important that you bring to a creation? And everyone went around saying whatever. And he said, you know what it is? Your intuition. That's what he used to say.
Yes.
You know, I guess that's when we have that little voice in the back. Mm. How many times have we reflected? Do we listen to that? Oh, I should have listened to that voice. It's like there's always a little voice. Not always, but many times in, I think, everyone's lives, where it's knocking at our door and putting messages into our head, whether that's a guardian angel or our soul talking to us. I think a lot of that is to be able to respond to that voice comes from within.
Yes. Wow. Do you think, Deborah, does that drive how you approach creation?
Well, you know, each creative experience is different. Working with opera is very different from working with film. Working with circus was very playful, creative, where we had the luxuries to play like children. Not every organization has that same environment or the same possibility to work like that, but we did. We played like children. And what I realized later, after Franco had left the circus, that what we were doing is creating community and spending the last 2 weeks working on the actual show. And it was a community together, the investment of each and every individual that created this bond when they got on stage that was intoxicating for the audience and wanted to be part of it. Well, in addition to poetry, but that poetry came from inspiring everybody to come up with, to be generous and offer their creative selves to the table, or their vulnerable selves to the table.
Right.
And that made me think about, yeah, it's that invisible thread that's kind of like, I don't know, the thing that I can relate it to when you're a teenager and you go to a really good concert and then you go home and you're totally in that concert for the next week. Do you know that feeling, Nicole?
Oh, I do. And it's happened both in and outside of being a teenager.
Yes, exactly. And it goes back to that far. But yeah, I love those shows. I mean, there's really good shows that are really good, really well executed in their art form, what have you. But then there are those shows that move us beyond words. You know, started to think about what's the difference. You know, what makes it that? What makes it that? I begin to think it's that thing that is invisible. René Duperré, one of the original composers of Cirque du Soleil, I remember what he said to me one day. He said, Debbie, a really good piece of music has an element of life and an element of death in it. So I thought about that. And that could be, you know, I thought about that many times in my life when I look at a work. Does it move me? Is there joy and is there sadness? And he didn't say a good piece of work. I think he said a masterpiece has both.
That is a compelling share from René. I appreciate how that statement invites us to consider the many elements that a work offers, including how is the work speaking to us? Is it speaking life, death, or the joy and sadness that you mentioned? I think it beautifully invites us to explore our existence and our own lived experiences. A truly powerful statement, Deborah. Thank you for sharing it. You're listening to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. Deborah, in your TEDx talk at York University some years ago, you had shared that we have to trust our inspiration. And if we have a picture at the back of our mind, that we should follow it and it will never lead us wrong. So can you share, Deborah, the inspiration, person, or even the teachings behind that share?
Well, as I had mentioned earlier, I had this picture since I was 6 years old of moving an audience by the people on the dance floor, which happened to be an arena, putting their right hand on their heart and then two hands in the air, and then everybody would cry in the audience. Funny, but that picture, whenever I came to a fork in the road in my career where I had to make choices, that picture would come pop back up in my head. And to me, it was about communicating with a large group of people. So where I would choose to go would be who I could, if I could communicate to a bigger audience, because for some reason I was led to communicate to as many people as I could in this lifetime. It was just kind of a drive that was innate. And this picture was a very solid image that would just show up in my mind, and it helped me make decisions because it felt like it was from my deepest truth inside of me.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
A deepest truth. What a powerful place to speak from.
Oh God. Aren't we lucky when we can speak from our deepest truths? I think we all have those moments where we can.
And then there are moments when it's challenging to do that for many different reasons.
You said that again. Yes, for sure. Life is full of so many different experiences.
Mm, yes.
But I do cherish when, and it's something that I crave. Well, I look for every day to try to source inside of me and live this day, you know, taking care of the listening to the inside of me, my soul, whatever it is, the core, the center of my being, to carry it with me every day.
I like that. Wow. Well, in that same TEDx talk, you'd also shared, Deborah, that we should give everything that we have. What did you mean by that?
Oh God. Well, I would say, you know, you have to surrender. You have to surrender and shed your own barriers in order to collaborate with people. And everybody comes to the stage with their own story, right?
Right.
You know, you have to be willing to, if you have a plan when you go into a creation, to go straight, but straight, there are blocks that you feel that it's not working for whatever reason. You're not moved, the communication is not flowing, there's something is not in line or harmonious, then you have to be willing to take an immediate turn to the left, to immediate turn to the right, whatever that would mean. As Franco would put it, we have to have our pants down, be prepared to put our pants down and try something different,
right,
to allow ourselves out of ourselves. I remember I've been on several occasions, I've worked with many artists who are very talented. I remember in one rehearsal session at Mystair, there was many acrobats, very, very talented, and a lot of male acrobats who were challenging each other. And it was a very, I call Mystair the stallion show, because all the artists were trained in Chinese poles and Qatari taiko drumming from the taiko drummers from Sato Island in Japan. And I could not find my way. This has happened on many occasions where I had to prove myself in order to earn the respect, which I'm up for the challenge, definitely. But I remember this one moment in Mystair during a Chinese pole staging with most of the artists in the show. And I couldn't find my way, so I finally just laid down on stage and died. I died. I just pretend to die. And then somehow that was the turning point that allowed a creation to have a rhythm where we could create. It's hard to imagine, but that's, you know, maybe that's what it means. You have to give, you have to let go, surrender, surprise yourself.
What an inspiring share, because I think it brings us right back as we come to our close of this idea, this notion of becoming vulnerable at times through our work and in life in general, the vulnerability and what can come out of that place of being vulnerable.
Yes, exactly. While I was speaking with you, Nicole, I was thinking about what I read on Facebook, and I actually shared 2 days ago. It's a free interpretation of Mario de Andrade's poem by Anthony Hopkins, and it starts out, "I know that I have less to live than I have lived. I feel like a child who was given a box of chocolates. He enjoys eating it, and when he sees that there's is not much left, he starts to eat them with a special taste." I feel like I want to be inspired to do that every day as well. And it's a little bit lengthy, but it goes on and on. He says, "I have too little time to discuss headlines. My soul is in a hurry. Too few candles left in the box. I'm interested in human people. People who laugh at their mistakes are those people who laugh at their mistakes are those who are successful, who understand their calling and don't hide from responsibility, who defends human dignity and wants to be on the side of truth, justice, righteousness. This is what living is for. I want to surround myself with people who know how to touch the hearts of others, who through the blows of fate was able to rise and maintain the softness of the soul." Wow, doesn't that sound like a mission?
Oh, yes, it does.
And then he goes on to say, "Yes, I hustle. I hustle to live with the intensity that only maturity can give. I'll eat all the candy I have left. They'll taste better than the ones I already ate. My goal is to reach the end in harmony with myself, my loved ones, and my conscience. I thought I had two lives, but it turned out to be only one, and it needs to be lived with dignity." Anyway, it's a much longer interpretation by Anthony of Mario de Andrade's poem, but really inspiring me these days.
Just as it's inspired me. What a declaration that is.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
Which speaks to every day. Absolutely. And it speaks to so many things. Truth. Mm-hmm. Being ever so present in our journey. Living a life where we access the fullness of who we are. And also, while accessing the spirit of love and joy and peace and kindness and happiness for ourselves and other people, while we're giving it to other people, there's so much that comes out of that for me. Thank you, Deborah, for sharing that.
Oh, pleasure.
What a joy it's been to sit down with you and explore today. Thank you for joining me, Deborah.
Well, you're welcome very much. It was nice to speak with you, Nicole. Have a wonderful day from rainy Vancouver.
Today, you've been listening to the sounds of Cannonball Adderley with Autumn Leaves and John Coltrane with Blue Train. Welcome back to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inika Hamilton. Well, we've come to the close of today's broadcast. I want to thank the wonderful Deborah Brown for sitting down on the show with me today. What a pleasure it was to share space with Deborah. Now, if you missed the full interview, we've got you covered. Be sure to visit turnoutradio.com and CIUT.fm following today's broadcast, where the interview will soon be streaming. And while online at turnoutradio.com, visit our archives of past interviews where we've been covering the stories that live both on and beyond the stage. And connect with us. We'd love to hear from you. Email us at turnoutradio@ciut.fm. Join me again next week right here on CIUT 89.5 FM for more of Turnout Radio. I'm Nicole Inika Hamilton. I hope your week finds you turning out to dance. Thank you. Thank you.